Greetings, Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Fozzie Bear, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Woo, woo, yes, you are.
So how's it going, Kevin?
It's going well. Welcome back, Fozzie Bear. I'm embarrassed to say I've lost count of how many times you've been on the show.
I have as well. But I do know when my plan for this show is to get the middle segment, the longest middle segment title back.
So who,
I don't
who,
like this one bit that it's taken away from me.
Who got that from you? I think that was that Elizabeth Rapp who got that?
No, it was a gentleman recently. I say gentleman, but he's actually a jerk.
Oh.
I don't know who he is, but he took it from me.
I'll have to look in the archives when we get
so
back.
So I got a lot to talk about.
Oh, no. This is going to be terrible. Anyways. Yeah. Let's get through the paperwork. You can get a hold of us at fatguysinthemovies.com. You can reach us on iTunes. Just search Fat Guys in the Movies, and we pop right up. You can just Fat Guys Network. A whole thing's pop up, because if you say Fat Guys Network's Fozzie's show does not pop up. We've learned that little trick.
Damn you.
To work around your insidious nature. There's also facebook.com/FGATM. Like us on there because we're narcissists. You can email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. You can also message us on Facebook, too, because we actually have a Facebook response coming up this show in the middle segment. You can go to voicemail, 740-205-6456. We like to hear calls and tell us how awesome we are. You can go to Get Glue and check in while you listen to Fat Guys of the Movies. And as I've always said, go to Foursquare. Just make up a place that's a magical studio in the sky and fight other people for the mayorship of said place.
Now, is your Get Glue title, is it under TV for some reason?
I do not know. Because
okay.
Meryl Barr set that up.
Most likely it is for listeners. They don't have a podcast section on Get Glue, yeah. But usually a lot of podcasts are listed under television.
Yeah, I forget whether it's under television or movies. It might be under quilting.
Okay, yeah, you'll find it somewhere.
It's somewhere.
There's not many shows with this title.
Well, that's the thing. I figure if people search, like, TV or movies, yeah, tons of shows. If you search quilting, there's, like, us and these, like, old ladies from Beaumont, Texas, and that's it.
Yeah, but they're fat, too, which makes it even more confusing.
I know. They're like, well, wait, the fat women who sew or the fat guys who watch movies? Anyways, how are you doing, Fozzie Bear?
I'm good. I'm real good. How are you doing?
Why don't you tell the listeners, since, you know, I mean, I'm sure that people know how to get a hold of you, but real quick, tell us where you are, what you do, how to get a hold of you.
Well,
what you can do for them.
You can find my podcast at thepodcastpodcast.com.
Yes.
It's a podcast where I talk to other podcasters and interview them about their podcast. You can also find me on Twitter, which I'd love to have you follow me on Twitter, which is twitter.com/FozzieBear. That's FozzieBare. And that's pretty much it. And I'm actually starting a new Walking Dead podcast. It's not up and running yet, but you can go to FozzieAntina.com.
Neither are the Walking Dead for that.
Zawo. But you can go to FozzieAntina.com and look for that show. We haven't recorded our first episode yet, but it's coming very soon. So if you're a Walking Dead fan, you can find it there.
Are you a big Walking Dead fan?
I am, very much so. I like the first season. The second season started out brilliantly. I expect good things from it.
Oh, okay, that's good. That's good. Well, yeah, thank you again for coming back on the show, Fozzie Bear, because, you know, we got you. You actually, I don't know if you remember this, because you do a lot of things and forget that you did them.
Yeah.
This happens. This is
It's easier that way.
Yeah. You campaigned to be on this episode simply because you wanted to talk about Paranormal Activity 3.
Well, I had alternate motives. I thought that you'd be able to get me into a screening early of Paranormal Activity 3. Little did I know, you have no power whatsoever.
No, there's no screenings at all. No one's they're not screening it anywhere. That's the thing. But what is nice is they are opening it at 10 o'clock on Thursday nights, which
right.
By the time this thing airs, well, actually, this might air since we're not actually reviewing any movies.
Right,
We can drop this thing on Tuesday if we want. But yeah, the they're starting showings at 10 o'clock, and which means I can go catch two movies on Thursday night to review for Friday morning.
I think I'm going to be there early for, Thursday as well. I can't wait for that film.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in the next segment.
Alrighty.
The first one we're going to talk about is Johnny English Reborn.
Are we really?
Yeah, we are. Yeah. Rowan Atkinson plays a bumbling spy in the sequel to the international hit.
Master, what is my destiny?
MI7 wants you on the first flight back to London. Only then can you be reborn.
English.
These talks are of paramount importance. Rogue states in Southeast Asia have begun secretly to develop nuclear weapons. It is vital that we get China on side.
English.
Give me 24 hours.
Now, do you care about Rowan Atkinson? Are you into British humor, first of all?
I am.
I'm talking to you, Fozzie. I'm not talking to... There's nobody else here.
No. I used to love The Bean. I used to love Mr. Bean on television. I'd watch that on PBS, and I actually saw the first Bean movie in the theater. So I thought he was a great comedy back in the day. Now I haven't heard from him in 15 years. He can't be that relevant.
Back in the day.
You know, the days of yore.
I love the way you're like I saw the Bean, as we used to call him, all the cool kids.
That's what the kids are calling him now, the Bean.
What's funny about the Johnny English movies and the Bean movie to a lesser extent, because Bean was a pretty big hit in the U.S. Not a big hit, but it made money. The movie only cost like $20 million to make, and the first one made like $45 million. It made its money back in America, but the whole point is the Bean movies and the first Johnny English movie, which bombed. Johnny English bombed the first one in America. Elsewhere, it did incredibly well, and these are these movies. They don't even have to release them in the U.S. to be profitable. That's usually opposite of what is traditional, that a movie does a certain amount of box office in America, and then whatever it did in America, say it makes $50 million, you can assume it'll make about $50 million overseas.
Right. Well, they're just paying for their craft services by releasing it in America. They're exactly. Like, oh, couldn't hurt.
They're just like, why not? Let's pay for the prints.
And I'm going to level with you. I didn't know this was a sequel. I didn't know there was a first Johnny English film. I had no idea. So that tells you what a big hit it was.
It was, it did not do well. I remember watching it, like, on video, because I wasn't reviewing movies then, and it was in and out of the theaters pretty quick. But I remember not being terribly fond of it. What bothers me about the Johnny English Reborn is there is a segment at the end of the trailer, and I think this may be in the trailer that we played, because I'm that out of it. I don't remember what we just played. But it has the joke of, hey, he beats up a woman, and then it's like, oh, that's my mother, which is right out of Austin Powers. And that bothers me, that it's such a famous
Austin
joke.
Austin Powers, right. And well, there's also a film.
Yeah.
What? There's also a reference to, like, Get Smart, where, you know, it's a lot like Get Smart, where they're like, who took the voice-changing pills? And he's like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that's something they would have used in Get Smart, and it's some similar to a joke they did use.
Yeah, and what bothers me about that is not that they've reused jokes, because that stuff happens all the time in Hollywood, but that Rowan Atkinson is somehow involved in it and reuses a joke, because that guy's brilliant. I mean, he's a brilliant British comedian. Bean was a great show. Blackadder was a great show. I've seen Rowan Atkinson in multiple performances, and I think he's a very, very funny man. But the fact that they've reused a joke that's such a popular movie in worldwide bothers me.
Well, he is a funny man, but he's more of a physical comedian.
Yeah.
So, like, I think if there's anything to watch for this film, it's the physicality. He'll be great at that. Even though he is, you know, pushing 60 now, I don't know if he can still bend the way he used to.
Yeah, he's old.
Yeah. And it shows.
Yeah.
But none of us are getting any better.
You know who else is old? Gillian Anderson's in this movie. And she looks
heard that. She's weird.
She does sort of that Gwyneth Paltrow British accent.
Oh, that's awful. She looked great at the end of the last X-Files movie, which was awful. But her in a bikini was kind of the highlight. She looked great.
Yeah. I wouldn't kick her out of bed for eating crackers.
Right.
All right. Well, on that, Johnny English Reborn gets a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it for us. We're going to go to a break.
Back, gentle listeners, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. I'm here with Kevin Carr. How you doing, Kevin?
You had to sling that in there, the whole gentle listeners thing. This is not your podcast, sir.
Damn it. One day.
Your podcast dominion is
I'm
going
totally
to...
I'm going to all about Eve you.
Are you saying that I'm like Betty... I was going to say Betty White. Who's from All About Eve? Who's the old fart in All About
Betty
Eve?
Betty Davis.
Betty Davis, that's right. My eyes are not nearly that big.
Right, I was picturing you more as Marilyn Monroe. You're quite voluptuous.
I am voluptuous. I told people, I said, I'm back a couple weeks ago when Real Steel came out, I said, I have the same body as Hugh Jackman. The difference is if you were to take his torso and turn it upside down.
That's what I'm right.
So I've that hourglass shape. It's just in the wrong proportion.
You're curvy where it counts.
That's right. So I guess we probably shouldn't say anything else about Johnny English. Let's move on to something else.
Yeah, please.
And that is The Three Musketeers. Paul W.S. Anderson directs this modern interpretation of Alexandre Dumas' classic novel.
There are things in this world worth fighting and dying for. We're warriors. It's who we are. It's what we do.
The Three Musketeers. I came to Paris to be one of you.
D'Artagnan, you want to be a musketeer? This is your chance.
You interested in this one at all?
Not overly.
Classic,
I might see it on DVD.
Literature at all?
I've never seen any of the Three Musketeers films that have ever been made.
In the history of man, there's like 5,000 of them.
I've never seen one.
Yeah, it's amazing how many. They did a Disney version of it. They did the Disney one with Kiefer Sutherland and Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen!
Yeah,
of
I know.
Of all people.
And who was the other one that played D'Artagnan?
Chris O'Donnell.
Chris O'Donnell. Yeah. I even liked him, and he almost drew me in to see it back when that was high school for me. And I was like, oh, I really like that guy, but I never did see it. But the one thing that might draw me into this one is I love Mila Jovovich. I think she can do anything.
Yeah.
I just adore her. She's not the best actress, but I just like looking at her. I like watching her move. She's very physical, and she's aging very well, and she's very natural looking to me. So I just adore her.
Well, and she's married to Paul W.S. Anderson, I think.
Right, but she'd still get work even if she wasn't.
But I'm just saying she did all the Resident Evil movies with him.
Right.
And now she's doing this. But one of the things that intrigues me about it is it's in 3D, and Paul W.S. Anderson as well as somebody like, I mean, I'm not to put him on the same level as like James Cameron, but he's one of those people who is going to shoot everything from now until the end of time in 3D.
Yeah.
Whereas there's a lot of directors have to be kicking and screaming to it. But I think the guy understands how to do 3D, and he respects the medium as opposed to just saying, oh, Hollywood, go ahead and studio, why don't you go ahead and slap your post-production process on it? No, he shoots it in 3D. So I'm sure it's going to look good. They're not screening it. And the word is they're not screening it for very many people at all.
Well, even judging by the trailer, it looks like it's a little disjointed as to what it wants to be. You know, it looks like it might be a little quirky comedy, but then there are other scenes of high action. But then, you know, it is a historical drama, too, so they're not exactly sure. So I could be completely wrong there, but I don't understand what they're going for in the trailer.
Yeah, it does seem to look a bit like it's trying to be like the last Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
Mm-hmm, right.
But without Johnny Depp, which is not going to do as well. It's not going to make $1 billion.
Yeah, it's pointless.
It doesn't have Johnny Depp in it. But I don't know. It looks interesting enough. The Three Musketeer adaptations have been all over the map. They're like Tarzan adaptations, where you have people who try and do way too... They give way too much gravitas to the classic literature angle, and so they cast... You know, they did The Man in the Iron Mask about 15 years ago, which was a well-done movie because it had, you know, it had like Gabriel Byrne and Michael... Jeremy Irons was in it, and Gerard Depardieu, and Leonardo DiCaprio, but that one was at times just it was like trying to be a little bit too much of an art house film, and you're just like, just because it's classic literature doesn't mean it needs to be stuffy.
Well, I mean, the guy who wrote it, his pen name was Dumbass. He obviously had a great sense of humor, right?
That's right. Those crazy French.
Yeah,
but
he was making a joke. They just didn't get it.
But they've gone as far as the very art housey type things, and they've gone to the other perspective where they had, like I said, you had the Charlie Sheen and Kiefer Sutherland version. You also had Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck in a version of it. Then you had the god awful Peter Hyams film, The Musketeer, which took Wu Ping action kung fu and somehow merged it with sword fighting, and it was an absolute disaster. That was a terrible.
That sounds
did you ever
awful.
See that?
No, God,
bad.
No.
It's bad. Shame on
yeah,
that movie.
Yeah, it doesn't even sound like a thing.
Peter Hyams was, I mean, this guy has done some decent stuff, like Time Cop. But, yeah, we need to go. This is one that's going to have to, again, get a preemptive suck. They did not screen it for us, The Three Musketeers, preemptive suck. Let's get on to the next one. The reason that you were, lobbying
Right.
Lobby. Yeah, you were paying political consultants.
I got my 500 signatures, so I was able to be here tonight.
Let me get you on the show. Yes, Paranormal Activity 3, more ghosts, more video cameras, more scared college kids in the audience. Boo.
Yeah.
There was something in the house.
Christy's like connected.
A real life poltergeist.
She's like, Carol Ann, I just gotta film this stuff. I set up my cameras around the house, right? I can maybe capture something.
Yeah.
What is going on?
Hey, Christy.
I saw you talking to somebody.
Kinda. He's very sweet.
He's my friend.
I don't see him.
He's staring right next to you.
Honey, he's not there.
This is not simply about Christy. This is connected to your side of the family.
It definitely knows about her.
All right, go ahead. Go ahead. Well, gush all over this movie.
Well, no, I thought that you would have. I thought that you might have been able to see it. I did, when I first, you know, wanted to come on, so I thought you could give me some insight. But it's going to kind of be hard to talk about. And I'm not going to say in advance that it's going to be a great film, because even the trailer for it, the ads that I'm seeing on TV, make me a little wary. But I will say that I'm really happy with the series so far. I know it's only been two films, but I love the sequel. How the sequel respects the audience. It doesn't. It was, everybody thought it was just going to be a cash grab, which in essence
it totally was.
In essence, it kind of
is. You can respect the audience, but it's totally a cash grab. Don't get me wrong.
But
let's not mince words.
But they respected the story, and they actually wrote a really interesting story that you didn't really realize was a prequel until like halfway through it, yeah. And then they like went back to things that happened in the first film, and I think they even like the things that people didn't like in the first movie, they addressed those in the second film, and you know they listened to the fans. So I like what the series has been doing. I'm hoping this film keeps it up.
Yeah, and what's interesting is. This was a secret screening at Fantastic Fest a couple weeks ago.
Oh.
And so I do know some people who did get to see it. And that's one of the few early screenings of it that has been around. And then they did like a contest to see who could get the early screenings. But of course, those tickets are way sold out. And it wasn't one in Columbus, Ohio. New York may have gotten it. It's probably like New York. It was like New York, Chicago, and like Tel Aviv. I mean, it's just this some bizarre overseas place.
Well, you know, I have a theory about that, too. It seems that they were taking this contest well up to the last minute. I think it was going on until just this week. Uh-huh. So I think the days have been picked long ago. I don't think that they were actually waiting to see who would tweet the most, because it would be hard for them to end the contest and then get the films there early, set up screening times, get an audience, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know how they could make all the pieces fit together within those few days.
Let me tell you a little bit of a secret about stuff like this. There's no oversight. If there is no monetary value to win a contest, there's no recourse if you cheat.
Right, exactly.
So, it's sort of like American Idol when they're like, or The Bachelor, where they'll be like, they know who's going to get picked off and or whatever. So yeah, I mean, you're probably absolutely right. They pick these a long time before. And you know, it's not like the Federal Trade Commission is going to be like, you didn't give this free screening to the people in Wichita, Kansas. So, but yeah, here's one thing I have.
Nobody's going to say anything, so I know it was picked in advance. That's why I didn't participate.
Well, one of the things I have noticed that some people are saying about it is, it's that the trailers are in fact not that they're not indicative of the movie, but the scenes in the trailers aren't actually in the movie.
Oh,
that it's more of the trailer's a setup for what the movie is,
okay.
Which is interesting. So we'll see how that goes. But also the guys who directed it are the guys who did Catfish.
I loved that film. I loved that movie. I thought they, and so I was excited to see what they would do with this.
Yeah. Now, are you in the camp of thinking that Catfish is real?
No, not at all.
You think it was completely made up and fabricated from?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I thought you meant, wait, I got confused. I thought you meant that I thought it was a real horror movie like Blair Witch. I'm like, no, it was a documentary. I'm not stupid. Okay. No, I believe it was. I believe that like in every documentary, you kind of set up, you know, what's going to happen, and you might falsify some aspects of it as to where you were.
You play with chronology and stuff like that, sure. But I mean, that Catfish actually truly was the movie that happened.
Yeah, I believe that this guy fell for this, and he thought that this was a real person he was speaking to, and they decided to go on this journey. I believe all that. And if it's not true, I don't want to know it.
Okay.
Don't spoil it for me.
I don't know. I've never heard anything.
Okay, good.
This debate died long before the even the Banksy debate, but...
Well, I thought they made, even if it's not a real film, kind of like that Million Little Pieces movie, even though the, you know, he fabricated a lot of the events, it was still a really moving book that told an interesting story. If it hadn't had that aspect to it of this being real, it still would have been a really great story that people would have adored.
On that, we got to go to a break.
All right.
A hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We got Fozzie Bear here, and we're talking about Paranormal Activity 3, which neither of us saw.
Unfortunately. So what did you think of the first two?
I loved the first one. I thought the first one was fantastic. And in fact, 2009 was a special year for cinema, because for years, it seemed that the cinematic experience had been lacking. You've been losing the reason to go actually to the theater instead of getting it on DVD or video. Mm-hmm. And I thought between Avatar, which you really needed to see to fully experience it, needed to see in IMAX 3D. Between that and Paranormal Activity, I thought it really brought back the theatrical experience, because it was Paranormal Activity is a different movie if you're seeing it alone in your living room than if you go to a dark theater with 200 of your closest friends.
True.
And get the poop scared out of you. Second one I did not like, and the reason I did not like it was, one of my biggest problems was they cast one of the most, what to me was a very recognizable face as a woman. Part of what made the first one work is these were complete unknowns. So you know it's not real, but you can kind of get to that level of disbelief. But if you do a found footage film and you cast somebody who's currently starring in 24, it just doesn't, or Sons of Anarchy. I mean, the woman who played the main girl, she was in a bunch of stuff. So you just watch it and you're like, well, that's an actor. And it breaks that, to me, it breaks that, the quality.
Yep.
I had the same problem with Apollo 18.
Me too. But luckily, I didn't watch 24, so I'd never seen her before. She looked vaguely familiar, but everybody does. But the thing, I'll agree with you, it's different to see Paranormal Activity at home, because I've watched the film a few times since then, you know, 10 or 12. For me, it's like, I'm not a person who embraces like Blu-ray and the big surround sound, because I'm one of those people like, you know, your horrible wife or your aunt who's like, I can't tell the difference. I'm awful that way.
But what blows my mind is I've been to your house. I've been to your place, and you're TV's big enough that if you got close enough, you should be able to tell the difference.
Well, as far as the sound, I'm saying it's mostly the sound with the first Paranormal Activity. Seeing it in the theater, there's that low rumble that comes about when something's going to happen. And if you don't have a good surround sound system, you don't experience that. You don't feel it. And also, there's that part at the end where, spoilers for anybody who hasn't seen the first Paranormal Activity, Katie Featherstone, the Katie character, gets possessed at the end, and her boyfriend Mika doesn't know it. And he wants to leave the house, and she's like, no, I want to stay here. And he doesn't understand why. But then when he walks away, she says, everything's going to be fine. But when she says fine, her voice changes just a little bit. There's a little like vibrato to her voice, and it goes deeper, and there's something not right about it. In the theater, everybody reacted to that. We're all like, ooh, that's creepy. But when you watch it at home, it's not there. You don't get that if you don't have a really good surround sound with a lot of bass in it.
Yeah.
So it's completely different watching it here.
Yeah. I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic about Paranormal Activity 3, simply because I thought the second one was such a letdown, at least for me, because it wasn't. I just didn't find it scary. I didn't find it interesting. I liked the fact. I liked some of the story things they did with it. And it's been a while. And maybe I would have a different take if I saw it again, because I saw it in the theater. There was a kid, the fucking kid, in the screening or at the
oh god, they're
showing.
The worst.
And I yelled at the guy afterwards, and I went over and I had words with him, and I almost got in a fist fight over it. Which I almost never do. I'm not that kind of guy. But I was there, and I what did I say to him? I walk out, and he's got like a 5-year-old. I'm like, it's an R-rated movie, for Christ's sake. So I walk over to him, I said, you know, nice, bring your kid. I made some comment to him, and he yelled at me or whatever. I said, and he's like, oh, what, you want your money back? I go, no, you obviously need it, because you can't afford a fucking babysitter. People I was with.
Ooh, sick burn.
Dragging me away. I mean, I was pissed off. I felt like walking up and saying to the kids, "Hey, you know what? Since you're old enough to go see an R-rated movie, there's no Santa Claus."
Ooh, God. You can be vicious.
I did not do that. You know what? I thought of, you know how you like always think of the best thing to say afterwards? That's what I thought of that night. I'm like, oh, that would have been awesome.
Oh, yeah. I'm the king of that. You know what I'll say about the second one, too? I'll agree. You and I were talking about this, like things that you like and you kind of know that it's not for everybody. It's just your thing. I am such a voyeur. I loved the second one because it was a lot of just like watching them live their lives and do stuff. I was totally into it. I'm
really?
Like, ooh, I wonder if she's going to study. You know, like when the girl's on the couch, I'm like, oh, I want to see her study social studies. Ooh. And or like, ooh, I want to see them in the pool some more. Or I want to see this housekeeper clean. I wanted to see all that. I like long lingering.
The complete like, mundane. And stuff, you'd be like, oh, yeah, you study that social studies, bitch. Yeah,
I was totally into it. I love watching that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then the scary stuff I thought was really scary, but then, like, when it wasn't anything scary, I'm like, oh, I can totally just sit and watch them have dinner.
Mm-hmm. Well, because it was security. The difference being is it was security footage or just it's cameras for security reasons versus the first one, which was let's videotape this crazy shit that's happening to you.
Right, and I thought that worked for the second one because it's one thing. I'm wondering how they're gonna. Well, obviously, based on the trailer, we know what they're gonna do. But I like the difference in the second one because if they had just gone back, like, "Hey, weird stuff's happening. Let's film it," and, you know, use the same setup,
yeah,
it wouldn't have been as effective. I like that this starts with their home invasion and they have a reason to get this security system. It was, you know, a little contrived, but it worked for me. Yeah. I'm able to suspend my disbelief and believe it.
I imagine that if I were to watch the second one again, I imagine if I were to watch the first two. Which I'm not going to do before it comes out because I'm way too lazy for that. But if I were going to watch this back to back, I would probably like the first one less, and I'd probably like the second one more, is my guess as to what would happen. So I'm hoping for somewhere middle of the road for this movie.
The one thing that bothers me about this third one, the trailer that they show, when they do the Bloody Mary thing,
yeah,
and you know they've shown that in every trailer, the girls walk out, but there is a woman's figure standing there, and that doesn't fit in with the backstory that we've got in the first two films.
That's supposed to be Katie, isn't it?
Is it? Oh,
I think that's Katie's figure. That just the shape of her hair and her body looks like Katie.
Shut your mouth. Oh, that just blew my mind.
Did I just? Oh my gosh, you wet yourself a little bit there, didn't you? But I don't know if that's
all in. Like I was,
I don't even know if that's in the movie though. That's what I'm saying. The people I've talked to saw it at Fantastic Fest. The buzz is 90% of what's in the trailer's not in there. But anyways, so even though we didn't either of us saw it, we're kind of both interested in it. And but it has to get a preemptive suck because they didn't show it to anybody except for these losers in Fantastic Fest.
Yeah. Well, you know, I got to say, I really admire what's going on with horror sequels as of late because you saw Final Destination 5, right?
Yeah, it was okay. Yeah, I mean, it was better than the fourth one.
It was, definitely. But I like the fact that they are listening to the audience and kind of respecting what the fans want. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really – it was a really smart move to, like, bring back everything that had been in older films. Like, they had all these references to older films. And, like, there were little clues through the way as to what the twist was in the ending.
Yeah.
So, like, they could have just done, you know, some basic movie where they just, like, basically rehashed the first one over again, which they had done for the others. But this one, I like that they turned it on its head a little bit and they gave the fans something unique and interesting. It wasn't a great movie, but it was just, like, for the fans. And yeah. I think that's what Paranormal Activity has done did with the second one, and I'm hoping it's what they do with the third one.
Yeah, that's the big catch. And what's funny is there's a big debate going on, and just people I know in the horror field where, and I've heard this from several people. I've heard this from people who've locally who handle horror. I've heard this from people online who focus on horror. I interviewed Lucky McKee the other week, and he mentioned this, where there's a berating of the mainstream horror in America, that the theatrical horror, the fact that R-rated horror isn't doing as well as it has been, and that the more extreme horror stuff like Martyrs and Inside and those kind of movies are done in the foreign market, and it was 10 years ago the Japanese were really pushing it, and 5 years ago it's the Europeans are really pushing it. But I think what's interesting is for mainstream theatrical horror, I don't think it's going to change. And you had the edginess coming out with Hostel and Saw, and as much as the country had an appetite for that for a couple of years, it's waned, and they're going back to the PG-13 horror, because if you look at the R-rated horror movies, have not done well this year at all.
Well, no, but you know what that is, too. A big part of that is the R-rated horror films that were coming out were really good. That, like, Hostel was good. Mm-hmm. Hostel 2, I think, is a superior film to the first one.
I think you're right. It just came out in June, which was a dumbass time to
release it. Yeah, but, and the Saw films, and even if, like, Saw 1 was great, but then the other Saw films, like, they're not good films, but they are for horror fans, and they're good if you're a good horror fan. Mm-hmm. You know what you're getting when you go in. Until but you, so they came out, they were good, they were popular, and, of course, anything that's popular, then that would, they were for horror fans, but then the masses wanted it. So then they had to make something for the masses. They had to dumb it down, and they had to PG-13 it, and now every Tom, Dick, and Jackass is going. And so we're not getting the good stuff we got before. We're getting really watered down, you know, like films by committee to try to please everybody.
Well, and I think also you have to get an audience. R-rated horror cuts out a chunk of its audience because it's always catered to high school kids and college kids. Going back to the slasher movies of the late 70s and early 80s, but back then, they make them R-rated because I think there was less concern about 15-year-olds getting into R-rated movies back in the early 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Now it just seems like a big deal, I think, for two reasons. First of all, because you get we're in a suit-happy society. We're in a, you know, we're in a
litigious.
A litigious society. Thank you for the word. Now I don't sound as smart as you do, bastard.
Sorry. I knew what you were going for.
But yeah, we are in a litigious society, and people are like, oh, well, my kid went and saw a Saw or whatever. And I think people are
transgender.
Yeah, and I think people are afraid of that. And there's the big, you know, when you have NC-17 horror, like or unrated horror, like Hatchet 2, and what an absolute unmitigated disaster that was theatrically. There's not a wide audience for more extreme stuff. It exists, and Americans are doing it. They're just not doing it at high budgets for the mass. And because the masses are going to reject that sort of thing anyways.
Well, the biggest offender of this that I can think of is the remake of Prom Night, which was the most watered-down slasher. It was basically one of those books that you read in junior high that are allegedly, like, you know, a slasher film. Like kind of like I Know
Like
what
a
you
Christopher
did.
Pike story.
Exactly. From, or the I Know What You Did Last Summer book that was for, like, the tween audience back then. That's exactly what that film was, and that's what a lot of them are now. Yeah. And, yeah, that's not why I go to it. I don't go specifically for gore, but I go for a really good story that's going to scare me.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think you're right. And what's funny is I actually enjoyed Prom Night, the remake of Prom Night, simply because it was very different from the original, but I enjoyed it for that sort of PG-13 horror. Because what people forget is people berate PG-13 horror, and they forget that it can be a harder PG-13 that would have been rated R 30 years ago.
Yeah, I agree, but our mentality has changed as well. You know, what we thought was... what we showed our kids back in the 70s, 80s, we would never, ever show kids today.
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, the mentality has changed. For some reason, we're going more parochial. I don't understand that.
If I were to hazard a guess, I think part of the thing is if it's going to the theaters have to make so much money, they want to have the widest audience possible. Whereas if you've got like Hatchet 2, you know, people are like, oh, you can go see it in the theater. Or you can wait a week and it's going to be on digital video.
Exactly.
Somewhere. It's going to be on direct download or DVD or whatever, or all those options. Why do you need to go see it in a theater? And it's so expensive to put R-rated horror, risky horror in the theater. So, I mean, even just today, they came out, this week, they came out with the announcement that they're pushing the Piranha 3DD or 3DDD out. They're changing the release date. They're pushing it back a little bit.
No, 3DD, the sequel, right? The
3DD,
second one.
Yeah, the second one. They're changing the release date, but it's like kind of been put into purgatory at this point.
Oh no, because I loved the first one. I thought that movie knew exactly what it was supposed to be, and it knew exactly what the fans wanted.
Yeah, but again, look at even if you look at the director's work, Aja's work. I mean, his stuff is great. Mirrors was enjoyable to a degree, but I mean, you got The Hills Have Eyes, you've got High Tension, you've got Piranha, the Piranha 3D. These are movies that don't make big box office. Hills Have Eyes did okay, but I mean, his extreme level of horror, he's bringing he's a French or Italian, I forget which one he is, but he's bringing that European edge to it, and it's just not clicking with American audiences.
Yeah, yeah.
Horror crowd, I think, yeah. But
yeah, but you're right. I mean, I'll always wait until DVD for most of those films. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to rush right out and see it at the theater. I might as well. Well, that brings up an interesting point, kind of off the topic, but I wanted to get your opinion. What do you think of this release for the new Eddie Murphy heist movie? I can't remember the name.
Oh, Tower Heist?
Yeah, when they're doing the on-demand release like a week later for like a $5 billion,
$60, completely stupid.
Yeah, you don't.
I think they're going to lose their shirt on it.
Yeah, I just don't see it working at that rate. I would do an on demand at home the same I would pay to go to the theater, but or you know even slightly more because I understand you might get some people. I don't know if I'm going to have a bunch of friends over to watch Eddie Murphy dick around for 2 hours.
But, this is not Tyson versus Holyfield,
right?
or something like that. Well, here's I think what's happening here is they're testing. They're testing the limits of the marketplace because especially if you – well, I mean, even though Tower Heist isn't a horror movie, that seems to be where it was originally tested because you had Red State, which Kevin Smith did in the Road Show, which was $75 or whatever to go to. But you got the whole Kevin Smith experience. But when they brought it to On Demand, they – it was like $10, $10 or $15. I think it was $10 to rent on demand.
Right.
Which to me is stupid. Why? I mean, just wait another month. And it just came out this week on DVD. You can go to Redbox. I got it at Redbox for $1. So there, you know.
Right.
Tucker and Dave versus Evil, same thing. You can get it on demand for $10. Or if you're lucky enough to have it in your town, you could watch it on... You can go to the theater and pay $10 to see it. I think they're saying, well, let's see how much people will pay. So let's take a movie that's got a lot of big names that'll probably do well, that's a holiday comedy. Let's see if we can get anybody to pay. It'd be stupid enough to pay $60 to see it early. I think they're saying, let's just test. Can it go this high? Or are they going to have to scale it back and realize, okay, the going rate for on-demand pre-release or during release is $10 or $15.
Right. Well, I had some friends over recently, and we were going through the on-demand to see if there's anything we wanted to watch. And I think it was Tucker and Dale versus Evil, because I've wanted to see that for a while. I haven't had a chance. But maybe it wasn't that one, but it was something that was about like $20 to get it home. And I thought about it. I had people here. But the thing is, I'm not going to go around everybody and be like, okay, give me $5. You know, I'm going to be the schmo that ends up like paying for the whole thing, so I don't want to do it.
Because it goes on your cable bill.
Exactly, because it's one thing to have somebody like buy their own ticket, you know, go on Fandango and buy your ticket. It's another for me to go around with a hat and collect money from people sitting in my living room. So it's not going to work.
Yeah, I don't think I think $10 is if it as long as it doesn't if it exceeds the standard ticket price, then for a single adult ticket, in whatever market you're in, it's not gonna fly. So I think the Tower Heist thing is gonna be unmitigated disaster.
Yeah, I agree.
But I think that I think that's them trying to see if they can go to direct download a day of release or prior to release.
Yeah, I admire that they're testing it and they're trying to like find these different ways because I want a different way. I don't know what the answer is, but I know there's some movies that I do want to see immediately, but I don't really want to go to the theater to see it. So
I think that's part of it is because I think people are tired of the theaters. I think with the home theater market, I mean nowadays most people let's put it this way, if you've bought a TV in the last 2 years, chances are you at the very least have a 720 high def television.
Right.
At the very least, even if it's just 720i, which is the worst type to get, it's still going to look way better than anything you would have gotten on a tube TV at any point in existence.
Yeah.
So I mean, now you can buy a 50-inch television for a couple $100 now. it's not out of the price range. And I think that's people not wanting to go to the theater. Why go to the theater where people are talking and kicking and texting and doing all this kind of stuff? You can pause or whatever. I think it's also a response to try and sort of circumvent the BitTorrenting.
Yeah, true.
Because which on one hand, I think it'll work because if you're going to BitTorrent, why not just download it legally for a fee? But I think it's also going to cause a problem. If you're spending $60, why wouldn't somebody just pay $60 then get a pristine high-def version of the movie and then put that up online?
True. Now, did I ever tell you that I got a cease and desist letter from, like, Paramount Pictures?
I know you did because you told that to somebody else and I was in the room when you
And I was so terrified. Like getting a legal document from like a film company in the mail is the scariest thing in the world. So I'll never
because they would what you do is just lose your cable service.
Yeah, and I can't live without my cable. Please don't take my cable. I would die.
Yeah, well, and they do that, and that's good. Bottom line, I don't believe in I don't do BitTorrenting. I don't believe in piracy. I mean, I'm a bit of a hypocrite at ways saying that because I go see movies for free and I get DVDs for free to review. But I pay for a lot of movies myself. Like this week, I'm going to pay for all three of these goddamn movies that I got to go see out of my own pocket. I do have a pass to an annual pass to one theater, but I still am going to have to pay at some point.
Yeah.
So it is a. Yeah, and I don't know. I think, I guess that answers your question the whole...
Well, speaking of theater experiences and segues, didn't you have a great theater experience recently?
I did. I went to the 24-hour horror movie marathon, Shock Around the Clock, in Columbus, Ohio. They showed 11 horror films. They were planning on showing Slither, but the powers that be... What happened was they had Bride of Frankenstein and Slither both scheduled, and they had the prints sent to them. And somehow the UPS truck, they were scanned into the UPS truck, but they weren't on the UPS truck.
Oh, no.
So they had a DVD of The Bride of Frankenstein, so they showed it on DVD digital projection. It still looked pretty good, but I would have liked to have seen it on 35mm, but the world won't end. And then they just cut Slither because there was no time, because they always run late at these things.
Right.
And, you know, it's kind of a shame but I'd recently seen Slither, but I mean, it was a great lineup. They showed the original Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, an archival print that had the original gel colors to it.
Oh, nice.
And with live music, which is a fantastic way to, I don't know if you've ever seen a projected movie from the 20s with live music.
No, I have not.
It's actually pretty, it's really neat because... There's a certain organic feel to it that you don't get than if it's just playing off a soundtrack.
Right, I can imagine.
So that was really cool, and they showed House of the Devil. I finally got a chance to check that out. I brought my son Liam, who's 10. Mm-hmm. Now a couple of them I sent him home for Flesh for Frankenstein, which was the Andy Warhol.
Good thing.
With Udo Kier. Well, what's funny is they cut out. It was the print they had all the good stuff cut out.
All the dick. There's no dick.
Oh, there's nothing. It'd be like, they start undressing and then cut to the end of the scene.
Oh, that's
like, shit.
You know, I watched that film. It was on Netflix recently. I'd never heard of it, never seen it before. I'd seen it on Netflix for a while, you know, the box. And it was just Udo Kier's big greasy face. And I'm like, this isn't interesting at all.
And it sounds like it's his delivery. At least they didn't cut those out. You had his delivery lines like Uwe Boll, where he's like, no, we don't fuck the dead. We fuck life.
You're right. Yeah, it's kind of campy and brilliant, but the guy who was in the film, who was like, you know, Andy Warhol's, you know, butt boy, whatever his name is, the one who played.
Which one? There's a couple. The one that's not European?
Yeah, the blonde, whatever his name is. I can't remember his name.
Well, there's the blonde who was, his head was put on the Frankenstein monster. And then there was the not quite as blonde, but had like a very distinct American accent where everybody else had a European accent.
Yeah, the American then. That guy.
And like he was making love to the woman and she's like sucking on his armpit and everything.
Right.
But what the fuck was that all about?
It was a little insane, but I will say that like, you know, when you watch movies from like, you know, days of yore, you see like attractive people. You're like, oh, I can see how they would have been attractive in the 70s or 80s or whatever. But this guy, he was like today hot. It was amazing seeing this guy.
To the point that his hairstyle works today too.
Exactly. I was a little confused when I watched the film. I'm like, wait, is this from the 70s? I don't understand what's happening. Because he looked like he could be on a soap. He looked like Fabio.
Yeah, he did. You're absolutely right, man.
Yeah.
Totally right. No, that was a lot of fun. So I sent my son home for that. And then afterwards they showed a Serbian film.
Oh, dude, your son came back for that, I assume.
Well, you know what was funny? What was funny is by the guy who ran the marathon, Joe Neff, he brought Liam up to talk to him because it's nice to have a younger audience get involved in these movie marathons because festivals are becoming more popular now and they're more accessible because you have DVD and you can show Blu-ray and that sort of thing. So these marathons, their days may be numbered. I don't know if they can do very many of these because it was only $35 and you got to see 11 movies back to back, including all these old vintage trailers and shorts and all these really cool things. And so Joe brought Liam up, was asking him how many marathons he'd been to and what he likes about them. And he's like, well, what are you looking forward to? And Liam goes, I'm really looking forward to seeing a Serbian film.
Oh,
As a, it was a joke. I told him to say
okay,
that.
Okay, good.
The audience howled. Hilarious. So yeah, but I sent him home for that one.
Good parenting.
And I actually had a conversation with him this week where I said, yeah, you know what, you can go to these marathons again, but bring a book, and if there's an inappropriate movie, I'm going to send you out to the lobby. But even a Serbian film, I didn't even want him in the theater.
Yeah.
Before or after, because even in the lobby, even though soundproof, you don't hear what's going on. And in fact, there's nothing you really hear in a Serbian film that's going to be problematic for a kid for two reasons. First of all, it's not a, let's just say it's not an audio experience.
Right.
It's not like, it's in Serbian.
Is that a thing? I was wondering the same thing. I was wondering what you were going to say. Is that a language? Should we know that?
Well, yeah, I guess it's Serbian.
Okay.
But yeah, so even if he's letting off this string of profanity and saying all this awful thing, you wouldn't understand what he's saying.
Right. Well, you also have to worry about the, you know, creepy guy who comes in with a raincoat just to see our Serbian film.
Oh, yeah. Well, what I would be more worried about on that film in particular is everybody coming out and talking about it.
True, because there's a lot to talk about.
Well, and the thing with the Serbian, what I actually liked it. I was surprised because I was terrified. I was like, oh, God, what am I getting into? Part of it is, A, I've heard some of the stuff, and I could guess what some of the stuff was going to be that's so offensive. Mm-hmm. But the thing is so many people define that movie by how offensive it is. They define it by the shock moments. Let's not mince words. There are shocking moments in there. There's stuff that you probably have never seen and won't seek out at any time.
Right.
But it's not, and it's, the movie is not just that. And the scenes that happen, they're actually, if you take it by running time, there's only maybe about 10 minutes of really offensive stuff in there. And all the rest of the stuff happens outside of that context. And you have the baggage of it in there, but it's not like, and I mentioned this to you in the show prep, it's not like The Human Centipede 2.
Right.
Which exists for no other reason than to show people getting stapled ass to mouth and shitting each other's face.
Yes.
That's the only reason it exists. That is, it's just exists for Tom Six to say, let me do something gross and disgusting. It's like watching somebody vomit for 2 hours. It's like, okay, that's shocking and gross. Is that really horror? I don't know. Whereas a Serbian film, I think a Serbian film has a lot to say. I think a Serbian film has, first of all, I think it's very elegantly and extremely well-made movie.
Surprisingly so.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look at like the both Human Centipede film, but especially the second one, it's a shitly done movie. It's not done well. It's not shot well. It looks like it's shot on somebody's home video camera. The second one is, it looks terrible. This one looks good. It sounds good. It's a professionally made movie. It is not thrown together at the least. But I also think what's neat about a Serbian film is it has a lot to say about the world's impression of Serbia.
Yeah.
And how the awful things that have gone on in that country. Nothing in that movie has not gone on in that country. Shit like that happens in war zones with ethnic cleansing and where you've got, just these blood feuds against blood feuds and just the awful things that happen. So what you see in that movie is peanuts compared to what's really happened in that country. It's just shoving it in your face and saying, you guys deal with it now, because you think, and your impression, the world impression of Serbia is it's this downtrodden country and the only escape is through extreme pornography. Because if you go to pornography sites all the time, it's like all Russian and Slovakian and Serbian and Romanian women in these that are doing, and they just happen the pretty ones get out.
Right. They're lucky enough to get a husband by mail.
Yeah, and I think there's a really interesting thing they would do with the symbolism from Alice in Wonderland and going down the rabbit hole and being, you know, chasing this dream that he never can never attain, and the more he chases it, the deeper into the rabbit hole he goes, and it's a whole Mad Hatter's Tea Party is what the whole movie is. So I think there's a lot that the movie says. I think it does work as a political movie. It's just people focus on, you know, that 5 or 10 minutes of just really shocking, extreme stuff. And because here's the thing, people have heard about it and then they seek it out because of that.
Right. And I think it's come to the point now where people have heard so much about it that it's not going to be nearly as shocking as people expect, as it's built up to
be. Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, the little bit I heard about it, I was like, oh, it's just going to be these people who kidnap somebody and put them in a dirty basement and make them, you know, rape each other for 2 hours.
Right.
And that's not what it is.
No. I appreciate it, but I came to the point, into it at the point where I had already heard so much. I had heard so many podcasters talking about it that by the time I saw it, I was like, okay, I can handle this. Because I had built up the most horrible graphic. And don't get me wrong, there are horrible, horrible graphic things in that film. But what was in my mind was, you know, a million times worse. I was just trying to think of what could be possibly the most horrible thing to happen to anybody in the world.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing I thought was interesting, and this is where I say I think it has a lot to say about the world's, and it's particularly American because I'm American, but the world's view of Serbia. If you watch this movie, everybody's high class. Mm-hmm. For the most part, everybody's looks good and is healthy. Even the crack whore, drug addict, prostitute, hooker, porn star that he bangs in the movie, she looks good. She doesn't look like, if you were to say to somebody Serbian prostitute, you have these pictures of Melissa Leo on the worst day of her life,
right?
With no makeup on. That's not what you get in this movie. So I thought it was really interesting how they took, you say Serbia and people are like, oh my God, a war-torn country, and you expect it to look like hostile. It doesn't. It looks like a resort the entire movie. Even the main characters, they live in a nice house or apartment. They're attractive people. They're even though they're talking about their want for money, they don't look like they want for money. They're not living in a mess. And you know, even that there's a scene where they're in the bad part of town where he's getting beaten up, and there's these they're these guys hitting on a woman that they think is a hooker. And you're still like, this looks like a nice area.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like downtown Detroit.
God, nothing is. So, yeah, we got it much worse.
No. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that everyone should see a Serbian film. Because, seriously, don't. You need to know what you're getting into if you're going to watch this. But don't go see it just for the shocking moments. See it for what it is.
So. Well, you know, I had an experience this weekend as well. I went to a convention called Rock and Shock. It was outside of Boston. It was in Worcester, Mass.
Worcester, Massachusetts, and, where everyone talked like the kid from
football. Right. So I went to this, and I didn't get to go to any screenings while I was there, but they did have a couple, but I was kind of working while I was there. But I did get to meet Mr. Mark Patton from A Nightmare on Elm Street 2. The one who played Jesse, the main character in Nightmare on Elm Street 2.
Oh, okay.
He was there, and he was really charming, and we chatted for a little while, and you know, I interviewed him for another podcast outside the cinema, and he's doing a new documentary, which I found really interesting. We talked a little bit about that. He's doing a documentary called "There Is No Jesse," which was, of course, a line from you know Nightmare on Elm Street 2 when Freddy's trying to take over his body. And he says, "There is no Jesse," to his girlfriend, who is we call Streep for cheap because she looks like Meryl Streep, but you know they can get her for you know at 1 million.
She was also a lot younger than Meryl Streep. True. She could actually play high school.
True. so he says that, but they're doing this documentary about gay people identifying with the Jesse character and, you know, like the coming out process and how the film was like an allegory for like kids coming out.
Really? I didn't know. I seen it like once, like when I was in high school. Is that how it works?
Not intentionally, but that's how it works. Because Mark Patton was gay. The writer was gay. And I believe the director is gay. But at this time, none of them were out about it, like publicly or like professionally. Okay. But they did this film that was so subversive. And it has all these, like, for example, the teacher, his gym coach, is spanked to death in the locker room, basically. With, like, towel snapping. It's
Wait, how long did it take everyone to figure this out? Was it one of these things that if you're watching it, you'd be like, oh, they're so good?
Well, it really quickly, but when it first came out, it was reviewed really well. And Mark Patton talks about this, how like the Times gave it a good review, and like it had really good reviews, and it was really successful initially. But then the horror fans kind of discovered it and started talking about it, or they started spreading the word about it, and that's when it went downhill. When the horror fans were like, oh, this is gay, this is faggy, this is blah 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 blah, and that's when the film declined. And initially, it was a big hit, and everybody seemed to like it. But when horror fans were so scared of watching something was so obviously homoerotic, that's when it declined. Yeah. But if you watch it now,
well, and it was the 80s too. That's because it came out in 85, 86?
No, yeah, you're right. I guess 85, 84, 85.
Okay, so it was right in the middle of the 80s where rampant homophobia.
Exactly.
Not like that's gone.
Right.
Now.
But when you watch this film, it's there's everything about it is gay. Even the tagline of the film is "The man of your dreams is coming for you." And there's a
now I want to see this again because I saw it like in the 80s and I didn't like it because I thought it was such a step down in quality from the
and
first
it
one,
is.
Which it always happens with her. So I just dismissed it. I never watched it ever again. Now I have to
you
go watch
do.
This.
And like even when he's curious. Cleaning his bedroom, that's the ideal scene. He has this like pop song on and he's wearing like a brightly colored, you know, geometric shaped shirt and like really, really tight acid wash jeans. And he's putting something up in his closet and there's a board game at the top of his closet and the game is called Probe. And then when he's like closing his drawer, he's like,
Probe's a great game, by the
okay.
way, if you've never played it.
No, I think
that's not what you think it is.
I think I have down in the Castro a couple times. But then when he's like closing the drawer, he's like backing his butt up into the drawer very seductively in tune with the music. And there's wow. so many little subtle gay things about it. It's one of my favorite sequels now.
Is it like Top Gun where it's
yes.
like where it, because again, it's like Top Gun, if you watch it, and you're just like,
how could this not have been? Right.
I mean, there's a lot of hugging and slapping going on in the locker room, and you're just like
shirtless volleyball and
yeah.
So. And that's what this film was like. So if you haven't experienced it recently, go back and watch this film with that mindset, and it's brilliant. It's absolutely hilarious and brilliant.
I may have to put that. I've been doing the 31 horror movies a day, and I'm doing better than I did last year. Last year I completely crashed and burned. I watched too many. I scheduled too many foreign films.
Oh yeah,
last year it's a big fucking mistake.
I know what that's like.
I'm such an American snob, but it just was a bad idea. But I may have to put that on my list then.
I think you'll enjoy it. We've been trying to do that as well, but and we're pretty much sticking to it because we're unemployed now, so I have nothing to do but sit and watch movies all day
and do podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. So we've watched a lot.
Yeah, it's something else. I it's interesting to talk to you about this because I think you'll appreciate this more than anybody else. A bunch of the movies they showed, especially near the waning hours of the day, they showed like Hellraiser, but they showed The Hitcher.
Oh, the original?
The original. And do you know how hard it is to find a 35mm print of The Hitcher?
I can imagine.
This is like the only one in existence.
Wow.
And it's from Britain, of all places. It's like from a British Film Institute. And the downside to this is they had to go reel to reel on a lot of these archive prints because they won't let you splice them in. And so sometimes you get these weird black scenes or all these just gaps in there whenever they have to switch a reel.
Yeah.
Just because they're not
set up to do that.
They're not. Well, they have the two projectors, but, you know, you want to have respect. You don't want to overrun them or whatever. So we're watching it, but beforehand they ran all these trailers. A lot of times they'll run trailers ahead of them at these events, and they'll be theme related to the movie. So there are all these, like, there was like they showed Christine. I think they showed a Christine trailer.
Okay.
They showed a trailer for The Car, all before The Hitcher, and then they also threw a trailer for Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Okay.
You know, when they showed A Pit and a Pendulum, they showed a whole bunch of Vincent Price trailers. But one of the movies, I forget what it's called. I forget the name of the movie, but it was some movie from the 70s about basically the crazy, wacky kids who get in trouble by hitchhiking too much. You know who was in it? Meg Foster.
Oh, really? How did she look?
Well, it's weird because she's like a teenager, early 20s maybe when she's made this. She doesn't look that good. I mean, she's still got those eyes,
yeah.
But she's one of those actresses who didn't really come into her own in beauty until she got like in her late 30s.
Yeah, well, I saw her at a recent Horror Hound there in Ohio.
Yeah, I was with you. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And she still had those eyes that would slice through the room.
Yeah, well, she has the eyes, but she's very gaunt and thin now.
Yeah.
Maybe not in an unhealthy way. It's just that she was always kind of she was voluptuous, I guess that's the way to say it. You
know,
she wasn't ever uber skinny, but now she's very, very thin, and it just doesn't work for her because she has a big head, so she kind of looks like a walking lollipop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
interesting.
Yeah, I thought you'd appreciate that. I thought you'd appreciate the seeing Meg Foster in a movie that was like, I got it. Now I have to look up. I have to look up what the name of the movie was.
Well, we watched Leviathan with her recently. I don't know if you've ever.
Was she in that one?
Yeah, she was the kind of bitchy woman that they talked to on screen who was supposed to get him out. She worked for the company, and she had a very small part in it. And Peter Weller punches her in the face at the very end of it. Just great.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I know who you're talking
about.
I don't remember.
Yeah, so that was a fun movie. I had forgotten that existed, but that's a really good, because, you know, my biggest fear in the world is sea monsters. And so that one completely plays into my fear about weird undersea creatures.
You live in an apartment in the sea.
I know, but they could. That's how Cloverfield gets you.
At least the movie was called Thumb Tripping.
Oh God!
And it came out
disgusting.
In 19. Yeah, I know. It sounds way worse than what it is because. But it came out in 1972.
You know, there's a little movie that reminds me of somewhat. It was one of these found footage films, uh-huh. And it's called June 9th, I believe. Huh. And it was on Netflix Instant for a while. It might not be anymore, and it's kind of difficult to find. I don't even know if it has an IMDb page, to be honest. It might, but it was a found footage film. It's about these kids who just go on a road trip through one of those weird Pennsylvania, you know, like those books that have like the weird Pennsylvania or weird Ohio, mm-hmm. And it tells like the haunted houses and strange things. Yeah. And these kids go on that, and they run into this family who's just really strange. They're kind of Amish, but they're not. Everybody, well, they look Amish, but then like their practices aren't, and they actually have a church that's an upside down cross, and they don't know exactly what's going on. Everybody I know who has seen this film hated it. I'm the only person that actually liked it, but I do think that that goes into my voyeur thing, because a lot of this movie is just people walking around and these kids being like total jerks and just messing with people and like knocking over mailboxes and just being awful people. But then at the end, it's a great ending. So what I'm saying is, I want any of your listeners who can find this film and watch it to let me know what you think. Follow me on Twitter.
What movie was it?
June 9th.
June 9th.
Yeah. So find me on Twitter, twitter.com/FozzieBear, FozzieBear. And let me know if you like this movie, because I feel really alone out here just floating, because nobody else has enjoyed this but me. So I want to know if I'm just crazy or if there is something to it.
Wow. Officially, Meg Foster was about 23 when she made Thumb Trippin'.
You know, speaking of young actresses, we see in old horror movies.
That could start off as a really bad thing. Speaking of young actresses,
right? Speaking of young nubile flesh, I did watch this movie not too long ago, and I think it's called, it's not Happy Birthday to Me. It's something with a birthday in the title, and I'm sorry I can't remember it. But you can find it by looking for Julie Brown. Now, not downtown Julie Brown, but redheaded Julie Brown from Just Say Julie on MTV.
Oh, wow.
She was in this movie from, like, I think 81, and she plays the older sister to this kid in the film, and she is stark raving naked in it. It was so odd. Yeah, and, you know, Julie Brown, she was quite the beauty back in the day. She's always been very voluptuous.
When was this made? Because she was...
I'd say 81. She was probably early 20s.
Okay, so this is several years before... before the whole what was it? Earth Girls Are Easy?
Earth Girls Are Easy, yes. Because I think that was, what, 88, 87, 88, maybe?
Something like that, yeah.
And so I guess this might have even been earlier. Might have been 79, 80. But she was young, and, you know, she's very voluptuous. She's very top-heavy. But it was so strange seeing Julie Brown, who I know from, like, Just Say Julie and Clueless, dancing around completely topless in a movie. But it's a good movie if you get the chance to, like, go out and find it. Are you IMDb-ing now?
I am IMDb-ing it right now. I'm just checking, because this is important stuff if there's naked women.
Right, exactly. We got
to That speaks to me. So, about when was it made? Early 80s?
Early 80s. And
would it be Bloody Birthday at all?
Bloody Birthday. And it's an interesting movie, because it's not set up like a typical 80s slasher, because you know who the killer is in the movie almost from the very beginning of it. And it's just about them hiding it and almost getting caught, and then finally people finding out and what happens then. And it's the killer's not very typical either. It's I'm kind of giving everything away now.
Don't give it away.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Definitely very good.
I'm currently also now checking to see if it's available on Netflix Instant, because that would be an incredible thing.
I don't think it is.
Oh, it's not even available to get as a disc.
Oh, really? A friend of mine gave me her copy. Yeah. If I might have to borrow it, and we might have to start sending it around, because it's an unknown gem. I had never heard of it until my friend Deadly Dolls, you know, Emily, who was on your show previously, she loaned me the DVD, and I had never even heard of the movie, and I really, really liked it. It just goes to show you that, like, no matter how long you live, no matter what you do, there's always going to be some 80s slasher that you haven't seen.
Absolutely. And that's what's so amazing, because everyone remembers the big ones, but there's so many of them that they just cranked out. For as much as everyone bitches about remakes and sequels and redos, there was a lot of that shit going on in the 80s, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, when the new... Nightmare on Elm Street came out, I went back to IMDb and I did some research. It came out, I think, 4 years after the original, and The Fly 25. Remake, which everybody loves, had come out like 22 years after the original, and nobody was bitching then. So,
well, you know, the same thing with The Thing from last week. This will be our segue into box office. The Thing, it was from the first movie. The original movie, it was 31 years from The Thing from Another World to John Carpenter's The Thing. It was only 29 years from John Carpenter's The Thing to this new thing.
See, they should have waited those 2 extra years.
Okay, well, I don't know.
They blew their wad too early.
What? Let's use that as the segue into the box office. The real steal took it again, which was actually pretty impressive. I knew The Thing wasn't going to do well because it's, again, R-rated horror.
Right.
Is tending not to do well. And it's kind of a shame because it's nice to see at least something show up in October. And now people are going to be like, oh, gosh, we can't compete with Paranormal Activity. And then it's going to be just Paranormal Activity month with no horror movies.
Right. Well, I haven't seen Real Steel, but that is from what I've heard, that is a case of lowered expectations. For months before the film came out, everybody's like, God, this looks so stupid. This is going to be the stupidest movie ever. And then when it came out and it wasn't half bad, everybody's like, well, this is actually pretty good.
Well, I think it also, it just has a stupid premise, but this has been a year of people, of movies coming out that people just were thinking we're going to be awful, and they're like, shit, that was actually really good. Like Planet of the Apes, yes. X-Men First Class. These had bad buzz going in, and then people are like, well, goddamn, they were good movies.
Yeah, it's been a good year for movies, now that you're saying some of these titles. Yeah. It has been good. This is going to be a good year-end wrap-up. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, but I think the in terms of Now, Footloose did not do as well as they were expecting. It kind of went soft. But I knew that was going to happen because I went to go see The Thing at midnight, and the theater I went to was a college theater because I got a free pass for the week, for the year there. And so I was going in there, and I said, oh, is everyone going to see Footloose? And he's like, yeah, no, nobody is. There's about 20 people in the theater. And I'm like, really? And I realized, oh, this is only going to appeal to like teenagers, like high school and junior high kids, and then people my age, women my age.
Yeah.
And that was it. And as I realized, that's a great example of them just carving out a market. Nobody in college gave a shit about Footloose because they don't watch the CW.
Right. Well, you know, I've noticed a trend that's coming along where people are starting. There was this huge backlash. Everybody was into the backlash of remakes for the longest time. But now it seems to be that's not cool anymore. So now it's great to accept remakes. So I don't think the remakes are actually getting better. I think just people are coming around and saying, well, it's not that bad. You know, it's not the worst thing to happen in the history of the world. And some of them were okay. So the people who are bashing on them are out right now.
I think part of it also is, and when it comes to Footloose in particular, one of the things with Footloose is, like, it's exactly what a remake needs to be. It's trying to find a new audience. And it's not trying to redo it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Maybe they're getting smarter about it too, doing these remakes. They're kind of doing them the right way.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. I don't know if I just think people complaining about remakes, and this is the thing, people complain about remakes oftentimes forget they've been doing remakes. Alfred Hitchcock's The Man Who Knew Too Much was a remake of his own movie, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
So remakes have been happening all of it. So people bitching about remakes, sequels, and reboots need to go back and look at the actual movies that were released in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was 1 year, maybe it was 88. I forget what year it was, and I was looking at something, and I was realizing, like, Short Circuit 2 came out that year. All these other movies that were sequels and remakes and reboots, because that's what, you know, Batman was a reboot,
right?
You know, in 1989, they forget that that's what Hollywood's always done. This is nothing new. This is nothing new to have a lot of remakes and sequels. Now, The Thing was interesting. I actually kind of liked The Thing.
Good, because I haven't seen it yet, but I'm excited.
And it's partly because I thought it to a degree, it respected the original because it did try to tie itself into that really well. Even though it did good things, there are some bad things to it. One of the problems, and a lot of people are bitching about the practical effects, as we talked about this with one of the other movies we'd mentioned earlier, but it used CGI, and that's fine that it used CGI. The problem is just the CGI wasn't that good. It wasn't as high of a level of quality as it was. And believe it or not, it wasn't bloody enough. And I realized that's what it was. When I finally sat down, I thought about it. I go, it's not bloody enough. That's the problem. Because if you watch the Rob Bottin ones, when the thug's face rips open and when Palmer turns into the thing, it's just blood, 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 blood.
Yeah. The scene with the dogs is terrifying.
Yeah. And it's because CGI blood looks a little goofy. So I think they backed off on that. but you didn't get that raw, visceral horror of it. And also, it just wasn't as, it wasn't as imaginative. I don't think it has anything to do with practical effects being any better than CGI. I think both of them have their merit.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
It's just that the things that were created in, and John Carpenter's a thing, were so just nuts, and these were kind of mundane for a creature feature.
Well, just tell me this. Does the film end with a dog running away?
Yes.
That's all I want out of this movie. Yes. I am good. Yes.
It totally fits, sets it up. So, I mean, it's not as, but I think people take that, look at it with nostalgia, and they're saying, oh, well, and great, Botine's effects were so awesome in the John Carpenter film. But there's a lot of holes in them, and there's a lot of things that, if you were to put that exact effect, it works in watching a movie that's 30 years old, but if you put that exact effect in a movie, like when the tentacles come up and grab the detonator at the very end,
yeah,
that's obviously stop motion.
Absolutely, right.
And if you threw that exact effect into the new one, people would laugh at it. Now they say, oh, no, it'll look great. But no, they'd laugh at it then. Not. And they would have laughed at the thing at the very end. Even as horrifying as it was very stiff when it comes out of the ground and has the mouth on the side.
Yeah.
You know, or when Palmer turns into an alien, his you cut to him shaking, and then you cut away to MacReady and cut back to him, and then suddenly he's all bloody and his face is melting. And you're like, whoa, there was a big gap there.
Yeah, I just watched Ghoulies, the first Ghoulies film, and I had seen it when I was a kid, and this is a case. I'm not a big, I appreciate some practical effects, like The Thing I thought was brilliant back then, but this Ghoulies film, I know some people love it because of the puppetry. It's stupid. It looks horrible. I would much rather, in that case, like have some bad CGI little monster instead of having a puppet that can't move and you can just imagine the guy's hand inside. It doesn't look good. So both, like you said, both of them have their merits. They just have to be used properly.
Exactly. Let's move on. So what do you think's going to win this weekend? Paranormal Activity.
I'm hoping. I really do hope. I mean, it's the season. The second one did.
Tis the season.
Tis. Well, the second one did well. It wasn't a big, huge blockbuster, or was it?
Sure was. It was enormous.
All right, good. You know. That's what I'm going for, just because I want it to win.
Yeah, I totally think Paranormal Activity 3 is going to. Again, these movies cost like $15 million to make. If that, this is going to be a huge. Huge hit. I think this was gonna rip it up. The first movie, they both of them. Well, you're right. They weren't huge hits in the sense of didn't make $300 million. They both. Well, the first one made 107 domestically. The second one made 84, but it cost $3 million to make the second one.
Right. And I think that a really smart thing they did was go back to the 80s. So we even have the 80s nostalgia when people are seeing this film. It's very much like watching Poltergeist in the theater again. So I think some hardcore fans are gonna really appreciate that. So it has a lot going for it.
Although 80s nostalgia didn't save it this weekend, this past weekend.
Oh, that's true. So we'll see.
I've got a quick listener feedback here. We've got Steve Gabe from Facebook, Steve/Gabe.
Which is
it? Facebook. Well, he claims his name's Steve, and that's what his name is on Facebook, but he sounds like he says Gabe.
Okay. So that's a weird speech impediment, Steve Gabe.
Yeah. I don't understand. I still don't quite get it. I should go back and listen to that original voicemail, but I'm pretty sure he said Gabe.
All right.
I think he's lying to us. Anyways, he asks about, now this is pull back the veil from podcasting. I'm just going to read his question here. It says, do you pay dividends for the intro/segue music cuts on your broadcast? And if so, how does one go about to get/pay for the rights of the song? Secondary, when are you thinking about upgrading your Fat Guys in the Movies theme song? Mm. Well, first of all, I'm going to answer the second one. It's like, we're not going to. The theme song, actually, we have the rights to that one in perpetuity. So until we start making tons of money, everything's cool. So the intro and outro music of Fat Guys, that's staying for the rest of the universe.
Is that someone you know, or did you buy the rights to that?
Nah, somebody I know.
Oh, okay. It's a good song. I really like that.
And it's called Coda. And gosh, I can't even remember the name. The musician is a guy named Mark Nine. He's a local guy I know in Columbus. But he gave us the rights to those or assigned us the rights to use on the show. Now the stuff in the middle, I'm going to pull back the veil here. Nobody pays any money on podcasting.
Right.
you know, for that. I mean, because it's not worth the money to pay the lawyers at Universal Music to track down every goddamn podcast.
Yeah.
Use some crappy cut of, you know, they're going to be like, oh my God, you used our Linkin Park song, so we're going to come after you. And that also works when it goes on the radio, because we actually go on the radio. You pay by needle drop, and that is the responsibility of the station. You just have to account for it. So I just send an account, and I say, these are the songs we used, and if you're going to broadcast them, you just have to pay for your licensing fee through your, you know, if they were to play a song, they pay. And it's not much, but they have to account for it at the radio station.
You know, the theme music on my show, I got from a friend. He's a composer, and I just heard the song, and I asked him if I could have it, and he said I could. So yeah. I have the emails backing that up. And that's, if you do podcast, that's the way to do it. And there's several sites like the PodSafe Music Network and a lot of different sites you can, like, Google search and find bands that want their music to be used just so they'll be heard. As long as you give them credit, they don't mind you using their music. So if you want to do a podcast, you can find something.
A lot of podcasters use it now. The catch is, if you use licensed music and you don't actually have the license to use it, you're going to run into problems if you try and start charging advertising.
Right. But no podcaster can do that. So that you're
Yeah, I mean, well, there are some programs there are some advertising programs that will embed advertising in, but nobody's getting rich making podcasts except like Kevin Smith.
Wait, what? All right, this call is over. I'm done. I'm out.
Where's my money? Where's my money? Bam. Where's my money? You're like Stewie coming after
right?
Coming after Brian for his money. But no, nobody's making big money off a podcast. Nobody's so you can embed advertising, but advertising is very, very scarce. There's 9 million podcasts out there, so you can pretty much get away with anything.
Yeah, anything.
So yeah, you can, you know, Serbian film your podcast all over the place.
Just put that explicit tag on it and you're fine. Anything goes.
That's right. So yeah, there's a little bit of a veil being pulled back about the podcasting world. So like anything, you say, you hear our malicious, I don't even know what I'm saying. our wonderful voices, our melodic voice. I think it was a mixture of melodic and delicious voices.
I think you meant mellifluous.
Maybe I did. I don't even know what that means.
You know, I'm going to be in, I mentioned this earlier during the show prep, I'm going to be in DC this weekend at a Makers Fair, and I'm going to be giving a speech about podcasting, and I know that I know so little about it, but the people that I'm talking to know even less than I do. But
you know quite a bit about podcasting, you just don't know the technical side.
Exactly, but that is an interesting point to bring up. You just brought something up that a lot of people are going to want to know, like how to get music and what music you can use and the licensing and the rights. So you just gave me more ideas for this weekend. That's good. Thanks for that, Kevin.
You owe me money now. Give me part of your appearance.
Oh, good God. All right.
You're like, I have to give you a bite of my bagel.
Right.
I got for food.
All right. Here's this nickel. I'll give you the other nickel. And now
we're on. Let's move on. Let's do a Fat Guy 5.
Let's do that.
We're going to do 5 great horror sequels. This is in honor of Paranormal Activity 2 or 3, excuse me, 3.
Right.
So I'm going to let me start off with mine, because you had 2 that you contributed, so I have 3, so we got them staggered. The first one is The Exorcist Part 3, Legion,
which I've never seen, but I've heard is much better than it has any right to be.
Well, the first sequel, Exorcist 2, The Heretic, is
awful.
Oh, it is so awful. I actually recently watched it. It was one of my 31 horror movies. And it is like a homeless man ate The Exorcist and then shat out something.
You're right.
And then a dog ate that and then shat it out again. And then they assembled it into a movie.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It doesn't even make sense. Like, the therapist is hypnotizing her, but the therapist is going into her head. And they're just doing this as if that's what therapists do. Like, the therapist is in her mind, like, you know, in The Cell or Inception, and there's no explanation as to how this is happening. I think the writer actually just thought that's what therapists do.
It is full of wackety schmackety 70s psychobabble mumbo jumbo. So yeah, it's awful.
Yeah.
But Exorcist 3 is really cool, and it's actually written by Peter Blatty, directed by Peter Blatty.
And I've heard that's a reason why it's so good, because it's a very verbal film. Like, it's his dialogue, and he's writing it really well because he knows what's going to go on screen. He's had the experience of writing a book and working on a movie, so he knows how it's going to translate.
And he brings back Jason Miller for it, too, which is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
So let's go on to your you got one coming up here.
Well, my second one is pretty self-explanatory. It's Paranormal Activity 2. And the reason I've said some of the reasons for this, but I really, really can't stress the fact that I love how they respected the first film and they follow the continuity of it. The things that they did in the first film, like, for example, there's a scene in the first movie when Katie screams and Mika comes running in with the camera, and it turns out that it's just a spider. Right.
Yeah.
And everybody thought that was so stupid and it was so trite. In the second film, there's a scene where that happens, but it turns out that, like, it's the girl screaming because there's a turd left in the toilet. And I think that was kind of like a big screw you to the people who in the first film. So
you'll take this turd and love it.
Yeah. I just love the fact that they listened to what they did in the first film and then they made it right.
Yeah, no, good. Next one I want to move on to is Wes Craven's New Nightmare. And, I need to go back and watch Freddy's Revenge, which is the second Nightmare on Elm Street movies. But I think the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, as horror sequels go, they actually retained their quality a little bit better than, like, Nightmare on Elm Street and Halloween.
True.
They got a little goofy there, but I thought that the New Nightmare was a great reboot by Wes Craven to really bring, and he did this in the midst of the Scream movie, so it was very meta. But I thought it brought back the horror of Freddy and took away some of the silliness that Freddy had developed over the last decade.
And it had the best trailer. I still remember that trailer to this day, with, you know, Nancy getting down on her knees in the highway and the semi truck going over her. I had no idea what was going on when I saw it, but I was like, I love this movie already.
You get sold by the trailer.
I do.
You totally judge. You judge books by the cover all the
time.
That's
how I roll. So my next one is, this is a little bit controversial, but I'm going to throw this in there, and it's just a me factor. I know everybody's going to disagree, but it's Mimic 2.
Oh, my God. Who directed that
I
one?
Don't know. I have no idea. I love
some guy
that he did, but it was a straight to video sequel, but it was pretty high budget.
It's a mark of quality,
right? But it was pretty high budget for a straight to video sequel. It followed the continuity, even brought back a character from the first film. And there's some legitimate scares in it. I remember watching this movie and then walking my dog right afterward, and I was terrified. There was a giant cockroach living under my apartment. I could, like, see it moving under there, and I remember running back inside. So it worked.
What I find so funny about the Mimic movies is a dirty homeless man that could rape and murder you, not to worry at all. See him all the time in the subway.
Right.
Giant cockroaches, terrifying.
That's exactly how it would go. Like, I see dirty homeless people every day. You just step over them. Giant cockroach, you can't. They have those razor talons.
I'm going to move on to the next one, is The Bride of Frankenstein, which is actually my favorite Universal monster movie from the 30s and 40s.
Good call.
A fantastic remake, or not a remake, a fantastic sequel that really added something to the characters, especially to the character of the creature. It's a little bit goofy with the little people, and they have these tiny little people in glass jars when they're trying to demonstrate the experiments that Dr. Pretorius had. But overall, it's a fantastic movie. It's very well paced, very well shot. It still had that. It was made in the 30s, so it was before it got really goofy in the 40s. They got a little silly in the 40s. But yeah, this is my favorite Universal monster movie, and probably the best of the Frankenstein movies. And Frankenstein is the first Frankenstein is probably one of the best. If you talk Frankenstein, Dracula, Wolfman, the Mummy, I don't know. All four of those are really good. But The Bride of Frankenstein, I think, trumps all of those.
Ooh. Good. Yeah, it is a great, and it's iconic. If you haven't seen it, you kind of have to appreciate horror.
Yeah, friend, good. Right?
We do have one honorable mention that you wanted to throw in that I mentioned before the show, and that's Troll 3.
Troll 3. Well, you said Troll 3. I'm calling Troll 2 as a great horror sequel.
Definitely that one, but a lot of people don't even know that Troll 3 exists. It's on Netflix Instant right now.
Even the people that are in the movie probably were not aware that it was Troll 3.
Well, they weren't, because the film is called Contamination 0.7 on Netflix Instant, so we just started watching it because it sounded kind of goofy, but then we started doing research on IMDb and Wikipedia, and the alternate title is Troll 3. So they just threw on that title, hoping to get some fans to come in. I'm going to say it's not a great movie, but it's so much fun to watch. It's campy. It's kind of stupid. But I will give the caveat that if it was remade, when I was watching the movie, I can see it being remade into a really good movie today. They just didn't have a budget. Yeah. They didn't have good acting. They didn't have good directing. But if somebody took it and knew what they were doing, it would be a great film because it's a good story.
You know what's interesting about Troll 2? I'll tell you this just before we leave, because leave the segment. I actually saw a Troll 2, obviously not in the theaters, because I don't think anybody did, but I saw it on video before it became chic to see Troll 2.
Oh, interesting. You're a trailblazer.
Yeah, it came out, let's see, when Troll 2 came out, it was 86, and I probably saw it at about 88 on home video.
Oh, wow.
I was in high school. Yeah, I was young.
And what did you think of it? Did you realize how stupid it was?
It was glorious.
Yeah. I'm glad you could appreciate it.
Absolute brilliance. And so then it became really popular thanks to Conan O'Brien and a bunch of other people. But I'll tell you, I was one of the first, because people like Troll 2. I'm like, I remember seeing Troll 2 way back when. There's no trolls.
And if you have the means, I highly suggest you get the riff tracks for it. It's one of the best nights you'll ever have. Have some friends over, have a couple drinks, download the riff tracks, and watch it along with the movie. It's worth it.
I will make a point to do that. So, we got to go to a break. When we get back, we're going to do the rest of the things.
All right, I'm ready. Welcome back, gentle listeners. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are here for our final segment, and we're ready for the world-famous DVD Roundup.
There we go.
Did you notice me stutter a little bit there? Because I'm so used to saying I've stole so many lines from you that I started to go exactly into my show.
You did? Oh, my gosh. That's the problem where you're going to be like, you're in the podcast, and my guest here is Kevin Karn. Oh, my gosh. Don't stop.
Right? It's the world-famous lightning round. No, it's the world-famous DVD Roundup.
You actually have a sound effect in yours. We don't do sound effects. My mouth.
I have a budget.
You have a budget? No, you don't.
No, I don't. I have no money. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Let's talk DVDs. I'm gonna do mine first real quick,
because
I think yours we'll chat real quickly about as well. First of all, there's a couple of them. The big one, Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides. I think this got a little bit of a bum rap by a lot of reviewers. I really enjoyed it this summer. I actually liked it better than the other two sequels. And part of it was because it was straightforward and it was fun. It goes back to the fun pirate movie. And I found it interesting that people are like going, oh, this isn't as good as the other ones. And I'm like, if you go back and look at their reviews, they trashed Dead Man's Chest and At World's End. So
I hated the second one. I thought it was ridiculous.
The second one ran a little long. But
and they introduced characters in like the third act. I was like, what is happening? Get me out of this movie.
But I thought this one was actually really, really good. I thought it was a lot of fun. And it was less ambiguous of a Jack Sparrow character, but I enjoyed it. There's also Green Lantern. We talked about it last week. That came out last Friday. So you can check that one out. Cape Fear is on Blu-ray for the first time. And Bad Teacher, which I really didn't like all that much, but I thought I'd give it a shout out. There's also The Howling Reborn, which isn't that great, and The Better Life, which is also out on DVD as well. But just give a little shout out to those.
Which Howling is that? Is that like 4 or 5?
I think that's Howling 87.
Oh right, yeah. They just keep going with those. The first one's really good if you get the chance. I just watched it recently.
Yeah, I watched The Howling Reborn, and then I said, well, for one of my horror movies this month, and then I watched the next day. I'm like, I'm just gonna watch The Howling.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. The only DVD that I'm gonna throw out there this week is Red State, coming out on DVD. I haven't seen the movie yet. I am picking up the DVD this week because I like the idea that somebody who's a non-horror director directing horror films. I like to see what somebody's take on a horror movie is. Yeah. So I heard it had middling reviews, but I want to see how he's going to interpret this.
Yeah, I made a point to check this one out because I wasn't going to pay $75 to see his Roadshow.
Right.
And I wasn't going to pay $10 on demand. I paid $1, the bargain basement price of $1, at Redbox and rented this, which is 1.3% of what I would have paid if I went to the Roadshow.
You've done the math.
I have. I literally did the math. So I thought it was good. I thought it was actually very impressive for Kevin Smith. I thought he worked outside of his comfort zone well. It has some tropes of Kevin Smith's films in it, and it has this one sequence where just literally preaching goes on forever, and that's the big thing that most people have been complaining about it. It's a bittersweet thing to watch. Part of it, it's not as much a horror film as it is more drama. It exists on that fringe of horror because it's the horror elements are relatively small, but But on one hand, it's very impressive, and I'm glad to see Kevin Smith have grown as a director. It's probably his most mature piece of work that he's ever done. It's also kind of a shame that when he finally steps out of his comfort zone and does something that's different than a lot of the other stuff, than everything else he's done, that he's like, I'm going to quit. So I still think Kevin Smith is a bit of a whiny little girl about this whole thing.
Oh, I completely agree. But, you know, you also have to take into account Friday the 13th, the final chapter, and the final destination. It's never the end. When people say they're quitting, they never quit.
It's like Julia Roberts quitting to do Broadway or Cher doing a farewell tour.
True. See, they'll always be around. Cher will never die. Do you hear me, Lord?
Well, she's not going to. She's well preserved.
Yeah.
She's all plastic at this point.
Thank God. I want her to be around forever.
I've seen burlesque. I think you might like Red State. That'll be good. I'll be curious to hear what your take is on it. Like I said, taking it outside of the context of the controversy and Kevin Smith kind of being an idiot, it's not a bad movie. So.
Good. I'm looking forward to it.
Worth checking out. The Stinker is V, season 2.
I didn't even know it had a season 2, quite honestly.
It had. Oh, my goodness. Because the first season, as wacky and as goofy as that one, it goes completely off the rails in this season. And the season/series finale, which they didn't mean to end it, but it did, is so ridiculous. It's one that you kind of have to see it to be like, what did they do?
I was pulling for this show, and I just could not get into it. I don't know why, but it just wasn't working for me.
I'll tell you why. It was awful. That's why.
Oh yes, that's it.
So let's do the review wrap up. We've got Johnny English Reborn, Paranormal Activity 3, and The Three Musketeers, none of which were screened, so they officially get preemptive sucks. But we might like some of them.
Yeah, I'm sure I will.
Next week, we've got Roland Emmerich taking on Shakespeare in Anonymous. We've got In Time. We've got Puss in Boots and The Rum Diaries. Thank you very much.
I feel so sorry for whoever is here next week. So glad I didn't get that episode. Good luck.
You champion for the right one, I guess. Tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us where to find us. You got about 40 seconds left, Fozzie.
Well, you can always find my podcast at thepodcastpodcast.com. If you want to find it in iTunes, search for me. That's Fozzie Bear, FOZZIEBARE. You can also find me on Twitter at the same name.
That's it. All right. You spent a lot less time than I expected. I should have given you less time on that one.
I'm easy. I don't have a lot to say.
Aha, there you go. Well, thank you again, Fozzie Bear, for coming on the show. Like I said, I don't know how many times you've been on, but it's been at least 4 or 5.
It's always a pleasure being here. I'll come back as many times as you'll have me.
Yeah, you'll say that now.
Right? It could go horribly.
Yep. We will let you guys go, and we'll talk to you next week.
See you later.
Well, yeah, because I told you about when I watched Someone I Touched, just because I was curious about it.
Of course.
And I ran out to get snacks because I was going to watch late at night and I hadn't been drinking so I could drive. So I ran out and I got snacks. And as I pull in this, I swear to God, it was a prostitute.
Oh, I remember this story. Yes.
And I was like, I should invite her over to watch the syphilitic cautionary tale.
She needs to learn her lesson.
That's right. I forget exactly why I thought she was a prostitute, but I had a really good reason for it too. I mean, it was one of those things because we live on an area that has a lot of bars around. So, and it's not that we have like streetwalkers, but I swear to God, I've run into prostitutes around.
Well, in Springfield, Illinois, when I lived there, we had a big prostitute problem. They were
big prostitutes. Well, some of them knock off your trash can. And
right? You come out in the morning and you have to shoo them away. We kept spraying and spraying and they kept coming
back. You get prostitute urine and you spread it out in front of your house, it usually keeps the other prostitutes away.
Right? Or you take a prostitute and you chop it up really fine and you sprinkle it in your garden and then they won't come back.
And drop.
So, yeah. Right. So, but they were, you know, Lincoln's Home is there in Springfield. It's a big tourist attraction. Uh-huh. That's where all the hookers hung out. There at Lincoln's Home.
Well, you know, hey.
Because they want the tourists. Like, because, you know, Springfield's also the capital, so you have a lot of the government people coming in.
Were they good prostitutes or bad prostitutes?
I don't know if they were what they were using their powers for.
Well, no, but I'm saying, like, let me
let me rephrase that. I don't know if you've ever been like driven through a bad area of town and you're like, and you just see, and you just happen to see quite a few women walking alone.
With like little brown bags filled with goodies. I see that quite
a bit. Or and they happen to try and make eye contact with everybody driving and be like, oh, hey, how you doing?
Yeah. Hunts Point, right here in New York. Yeah. That's right. The place.
But I've seen women like that, and as you're driving, the closer you get to them, it's like yeah, it's looking even worse as you get in. Or you've been, you know, like I said, like where I'm from, if you go down the road, there's a speedway down the road, and I've gone in there, and there's you could tell because they're the ones that like go and buy cigarettes and condoms, mm-hmm. you know, and they look. There's one, and I forget what exactly she bought, but it was just she was complaining to somebody about work, had to go work. She was working, but she looked good. She looked made up, but she was completely alone. She was made up, but not dressed too nicely. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, she's got to be a prostitute. Because who else, what other woman is running around alone, dressed up enough, but not, I mean, she didn't look like a college girl going out. But she looked like she was, and she had some guy, or whatever, I don't know what it was. And the same thing with this girl at the BP station. I'm like, there's something about her that made me think she was a prostitute.
I don't know. You know it when you see it.
That's right.